From the Radio Ranch in the heart of Liberty, Texas, it's the Bombastic Blogcast for Wednesday, October 30th, 2024. I'm the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
Hey there yourself. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, the kid with the patriotic red, white, and blue eyes, and one heck of a nice guy. Let's get things started officially with
the Daily Denogram.
You got it. Words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or noggin nuggets. You get to make the call. It says here, don't work for recognition, but do work worthy of recognition. I'm just glad I can recognize work when I see it, and I'm still able to do it.
Good man.
Let's move along now with the so-called educational part of this big blogcast.
Twisted History.
That's what we're talking about.
Gather round, kids, because a lot of things happen on this day throughout history.
Oh, boy.
Some cool, some not so cool.
You're ready.
Just the same. You need to know your Twisted History.
Yeah, sure.
You might be quizzed.
Whatever. Well, kids, it was on this day in 1938, Orson Welles broadcast a radio adaptation of H.G. Wells' The War of the Worlds, causing a massive panic in some of the audience in the United States because it was Halloween. And the way he produced the show, he made it sound like it was a regular music program being interrupted by news bulletins about ships arriving from Mars. And after it was all said and done, there actually was a federal investigation on it. And it was on this day in 2005, the rebuilt Dresden Frauenkirche, which was destroyed in the firebombing of Dresden during World War II, was reconsecrated after a 13-year rebuilding project. And I want to note something here that I find interesting. This project wasn't undertaken until after the German reunification was complete. Meaning the old communists of East Germany never had the resources nor the will to try to restore that beautiful church. It's an amazing structure.
This place is freaking awesome!
It's kind of hard to find anybody who has a resume that's anywhere near as impressive as that of Tulsi Gabbard. Former Democrat, now officially a member of the GOP. She's a lieutenant colonel in the Army Reserve. She's been a part of the Army for 21 years, I believe now. An amazing, amazing person. And every time she gets up to speak, you can tell she's speaking from the heart as a real dyed-in-the-wool American. And yet she was born and raised in Hawaii. Yeah, I could see where somebody from Hawaii would feel a little bit detached from the concept of America. Because, well, they're out there in the islands, they're out in the middle of the Pacific in a beautiful paradise. And back here on the mainland, well, you know, it is what it is. It's a beautiful country, no denying that, made up of a lot of beautiful people. But there are true insurrectionists here, and I think they consist of most members of the Democrat Party. Democrat Party used to be a good political party, a competitive political party. And they used to be a halfway honest political party. I mean, there was corruption on both sides, probably in equal measure at one time. But today, it's as though the Democrat Party is trying desperately to, monopolize corruption, make corruption a part of American life. And in the process, destroying everything along the way, not the least of which would be our Constitution. And nobody sees this more clearly than Tulsi Gabbard. An amazing, amazing woman. So in her speech at Trump's gathering at Madison Square Garden, which I finally had a chance to watch most of it. I wasn't watching the whole thing. My gosh, I don't have that much time in the course of a day. But I did see all of the key speakers. Tucker Carlson was great. It was just an amazing evening. But her speech in particular really got to me because everything she had to say was spot on. She said that voting for Democrat nominee Kamala Harris would be like voting for war. And I don't believe that that's a stretch by any stretch of the imagination. And I hope you had a chance to see that moment last week when she became a Republican. And she left the Democrat Party in 2022, so she's had a lot of time to think about this. And to start her speech, she read from the Declaration of Independence. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, and that our Creator has endowed us with certain unalienable rights. Among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Then she said, as we gather here today on this historic occasion, we stand together as proud Americans in understanding that these very rights are under attack. So we face this historic crossroads where our freedom and our future is in our hands. There's never been a more clear choice in any election in my life, and our ability to live in a true, peaceful, and free and prosperous country is on the line. She couldn't have been more accurate. And she talked about her 20 years in the U.S. military and said that the problem of war was very personal to her. Well, yeah. She mentioned that she deployed to different war zones 3 times over that period, and she has seen the cost of war. She said, for my brothers and sisters who paid the ultimate price, I carry their memories and their sacrifice in my heart every day. So this choice that we have before us as Americans is critical. It's important to us. It's important to those of us who serve, who volunteered to put our lives on the line for the safety, security, and freedom of our country and our people. And it's critical to all of us. Here is the choice that we have. A vote for Kamala Harris is a vote for Dick Cheney, and it's a vote for war, more war, likely World War III and nuclear war. A vote for Donald Trump is a vote for a man who wants to end wars, not start them, and who's demonstrated already that he has the courage and strength to stand up and fight for peace. A vote for Kamala Harris is a vote for open borders, where known violent criminals and Islamist terrorists are streaming across our borders, placing us at risk. A vote for Donald Trump is a vote for secure borders and safe communities, and a confidence that he'll seek out those who seek to do us harm and get them out. It was a great speech. Now, I can't imagine anybody hearing that speech and not being so motivated to get out and actually vote. Nate Silver's most recent prediction is that Trump could win all of the important split states this time around. And Silver's research shows that Trump has a 24.4% chance of winning all 7 swing states. Now, this is the most likely outcome. The forecast also says that Harris has a 15.6% chance of winning all the battleground states. So it also shows, too, Nate Silver's track record is pretty darn good. It's a little better than average. And it also shows that Harris would win the race if she won all swing states, except Arizona and Georgia, where Trump is currently ahead. Kind of hard to imagine that, but that's the way it is. And his model, on the other hand, says that this is only a 1.7% likely chance of happening. So, you know, it's a 3.4% likely chance that Harris will win Georgia, but not Arizona, and 2.9% likely that the Democrats will win Arizona, but not Georgia. So the model shows that there's a 4.6% chance that the Republicans are going to win every swing state except Nevada, where Harris is currently ahead by a very small amount. In this case, Trump would win the election because the vice president would get 232 Electoral College votes. Silver's overall prediction shows that Harris is most likely to win when Democrats win between 3 and 5 of the key states. That's how many Electoral College votes the vice president would need to win if she only won Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania. That's an 86.2% chance of winning overall. Now, polls show that Trump's ahead in Arizona, Georgia, and North Carolina, while Harris is ahead in Michigan, Wisconsin, and Nevada. A tracker from Nate's website, 538, at least he founded it, says the former president is ahead by only 0.2 of a point in Pennsylvania. But a tracker from Silver himself says the state's tied. So that shows you how close things appear to be. But again, these are polls. And I wish I could remember how many elections have come and gone where the polls said one thing and the reality was something else entirely. Yeah, I couldn't agree more with Tulsi Gabbard when she cautions us that a vote for Kamala is a vote for war. And I really want to see Donald Trump win this, and I'd love to see him win it by a landslide. I'd love to see him win the popular vote, and that could very well happen. I mean, this is just such a strange election. Let's get back to Nate Silver again, okay? Now, a significant shift in this election is showing very, very blatantly, at least in the eyes of Nate Silver. According to the latest forecast from his own self, Trump now has a 55% chance of winning the presidency, while Harris holds a 45% chance. Now, this is a notable change in momentum as the campaign enters the final stretch. So, Silver's model is predicting that Trump is winning 271 electoral votes, narrowly surpassing the required 270. And 270 is the threshold that's needed to secure the presidency compared to Harris's projected 267. I don't know that I agree with this. I think if this election is even somewhat honest, I think Trump is going to pull more than the 271. But hey, this is Nate Silver. This is what he does for a living. Let's go along with it for at least a few minutes, okay? His model predicts Trump winning 271 electoral votes. Now, in terms of swing state probabilities, Trump is now projected to lead in Pennsylvania, Arizona, Georgia, and North Carolina. He's also slightly ahead now in Nevada, with a 50% to 49% edge. Harris, however, is forecast to maintain slight leads in Wisconsin and Michigan, two Midwestern states that are actually critical to her path to victory. And these states have seen intensive campaigning from both candidates. And that's usually the case in most elections. Oh, my God. You know, they have to fight over Michigan and Wisconsin. I don't know if it's the cold weather that warps people's brains up there, that they have a tendency to lean Democrat still after being a Rust Belt area for how long? My God. It's been since the 1950s, the late 1950s. That area has been the Rust Belt of the nation. Although there's been some changes in Milwaukee, not so much the standard of living, but downtown Milwaukee has seen quite a bit of construction over the last couple of years. I don't know what to pin that on, but it's nice to see. Detroit seems to be coming back up there in Michigan, but a lot of that came with the administration of Donald Trump. When Trump brought back all that manufacturing, he's going to do that again, too. And that is essential. If that area of the country, if the Great Lakes area of the United States of America is ever to come back, we must bring manufacturing back to this country. And I'll go so far as to say through whatever means necessary, be it tariffs or what have you. Intimidation, if that works. But we must bring our manufacturing base back to this country. So let's get back to Nate Silver's forecasting, okay? It reflects the fluctuating nature of public sentiment, which is huge. Just a month ago, and this is interesting, just a month ago, Harris was leading in several of these battlegrounds, but a series of factors ranging from economic concerns to foreign policy developments to her obvious inability to answer questions in interviews, all of this appears to have shifted voter sentiment. I mean, she gets on TV and she shoots herself in the foot over and over and over again. And that snide remark she made to that protester at her rally last week, who said, "Jesus is Lord," and she shot back with, "I think you're in the wrong rally." Oh my God, she couldn't have done more damage to herself if she were armed. So Trump's focus on issues like inflation, border security, the economy in general, has resonated with a very substantial portion of undecided voters, giving him a boost in these, the closing days of the race. It ain't over till it's over, but we are in the closing stretch. We're less than a week away from the election. God only knows how long it's going to take, especially the questionable states, the swing states, to count their votes. I think this is so sad. I mean, years ago, we used to have the results of the election the morning after the election. That's not going to be the case again. And then when Donald Trump wins, of course, the Democrats are going to, they're going to go into high gear. And they're going to try to invalidate the election. They're going to contest the election. And then this very, very dangerous individual, attorney, Jamie Raskin, has a plan to disqualify Donald Trump from actually taking the White House in January. Jamie Raskin is a very dangerous individual. And when it comes to individuals who are real dangers to our country, I put Jamie Raskin right up there alongside John Brennan and James Clapper. Now, further complicating the outcome is the U.S. House of Representatives race. Remember, we're doing that too. And it's predicted to be equally tight. According to an outfit called Polymarket, according to Polymarket odds, Republicans have a 51% chance of retaining control, while Democrats are at 49%. And this thin margin adds another level of uncertainty to Election Day, as control of Congress could significantly influence the next administration's agenda. I've seen it happen before. In fact, I've seen it happen more often than not. So in 538's simulations, Trump wins 54 times out of 100, while Harris wins 46 times. There's also a slim chance, less than one in 100, that no candidate secures the necessary 270 electoral votes, potentially pushing the decision to the House of Representatives. Now, an outcome like that would be an historic scenario not seen since the 19th century. So I wouldn't lie awake worrying about that. 4 years ago, the 2020 election was one of the closest in U.S. history for Donald Trump. Trump came close to winning key battleground states like Arizona, Georgia, and Wisconsin. Just a shift of roughly 44,000 votes in those states would have secured him a second term. Now, if Trump can flip just a small percentage of voters in these swing states, it could be enough to deliver a victory. In places like Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, where Trump has already shown he can compete strongly, even a 1 to 2% swing, a 1 to 2% swing could make all the difference. Creepy. And with this small but crucial shift, Trump could find himself back in the White House come January of 2025. Thank God. But then again, we have those demons in the Democrat Party, the Democrat Party, Jamie Raskin chief among them, who I guarantee you, Donald Trump wins this election, you're going to see so much unrest, political unrest, because the Democrats are going to go into high gear and they are going to try to disqualify Donald Trump from taking the White House, from actually being inaugurated. Now, in a scenario like that, I would imagine, and I've got a good imagination, I would imagine then things would shift to J.D. Vance, and we will be in good hands with J.D. Vance, I think. Certainly better hands than we've been in the last 4 years, absolutely. But this is not going to end well. It really isn't. Don't put anything past the Democrat Party, because they're going to fight dirty. They always do, because it's the only way they can win. It's the only way not only to win, it's the only way they can even place. Even though I've lived in Texas, Houston specifically, or the Houston area almost all of my life, from the time I was a late teenager, okay, I've always had this perverse obsession about the Rust Belt area of the country because that's where I grew up. I was born in Milwaukee. The family moved to about 25 miles west of Cleveland, Ohio, when I was about 6 years old. In fact, we moved during the Christmas holidays of 1954, to show you how long ago that was. And I remember the strikes that my dad had to deal with. He was a white-collar worker. He was in mid-level management for a company that built construction equipment, cranes, backhoes, front-end loaders, that sort of thing. And that was a very turbulent business to be in back in the 1950s and 60s. It got even more so. And fortunately, by 1972, the company my dad worked for moved everybody down to Chattanooga, Tennessee. And, of course, by that time, I was already living in Houston. But I was so happy to see Mom and Dad moving to Chattanooga. And they loved it down there. My mom, right up until the day she passed away, she lived her last almost 10 years with my sister-in-law up in Michigan. And Mom stayed in that house in Chattanooga as long as she possibly could. And every time that I would talk to her on the phone after she moved to Michigan, she would always say, "I miss Chattanooga." Well, who wouldn't? It's a lovely community. It really is. I think these days, young people looking for a good place to live and to raise a family would do well to look to the South. But having said that, I still have this perverse interest in the Rust Belt, particularly places like Detroit. A few minutes ago, I said Detroit is coming back. Well, it is, but it's coming back at a snail's pace. Now, with somebody like Donald Trump in the White House, who will see to it that manufacturing is brought back, I could see America's auto builders, which it looks like before long we're going to be down to just three, which would be Tesla, which is in Texas, and Ford and GM up in Michigan. Chrysler appears to be either dying or getting killed by this inept management at Stellantis. And when I saw that Fiat was going to be merging with Peugeot out of France, I right away got the feeling that we better get ready to say goodbye to Chrysler. Hopefully I'm wrong. But as we rejuvenate our manufacturing base, one of the most blatant beneficiaries of that would be Detroit. Because Detroit, in its still somewhat depressed state, has one thing going for it that I think would signal a quick return to manufacturing. That is, so many of those old plants are sitting there empty. All they have to do is move in, turn on the electricity, and get to work. All right, having said that, I want to go over here to the Epoch Times because they have an interesting thing here. As Michigan's statewide early voting began on October 26th, long wait times discouraged more than a few would-be participants who spoke with the Epoch Times. Bill Keller decided against waiting in a two-hour line in Farmington Hills. He said, "I think what I'll do is absentee vote." Now, maybe that's a good thing because he's a supporter of Kamala Harris. So, fine, go home, Bill. Farnsworth and Tricia Howard were deterred by the line at a site in Waterford Oaks. Now, Farnsworth Howard, who's a retired United Auto Workers Union representative, said that the two plan to vote for former President Trump in the hopes of ushering in a new era. Lord knows we need it. And for all the attrition, the state posted record-breaking returns. It's Michigan's first presidential election with early voting, and it was instituted via a 2022 ballot proposal to amend the state constitution, and more than 145,000 early ballots were cast on October 26th alone. So, Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson said in a statement announcing the figures, "We're starting a new tradition of early voting here in Michigan. I hope it works out well." The buzz of activity was reflected in the polling numbers. by late afternoon, again, just that one day, October 26th, by late afternoon, 463 ballots had been pushed through the tabulator at the Farmington Hill site. And Don Raymond, who was overseeing early voting at the site, said, "This is a higher turnout than we expected." Then she told Epoch Times that things had gone well. Quoting her, "We haven't had many people with any political issues that they're trying to bring up with us when it's something that we shouldn't be discussing here." Good point. Now, for senior citizen Leah, like many other voters, we just know her first name, 2024 is about more than policy and dry statistics. It's charged with emotion. She and her husband, Hans, didn't wish to use their real names for fear of reprisal. Isn't that a shame? Here we are, United States of America, and we have people who are living in fear of reprisal. But I refuse to put a Trump sticker on my car. I was going to do one on the rear window of my car, even here in Texas. I refuse because I go to Houston a lot. I just don't want my car damaged. Now, Leah is a dietitian, and she described the election as her chance to oppose Trump, a man she likened to Adolf Hitler. How idiotic is that? How idiotic is that? I mean, just this kind of ignorance, and we share a freeway with these people. And she says, "Harris makes you feel good." Really? She scares the bejabbers out of me when she can't answer a simple question from a journalist. And then Hans noted that his own brother-in-law was attending a nearby Trump rally. Excuse me. Harris held a rally in the state on the same day. And Hans, who's a retired specialty store owner, said, "All my friends that like Trump think that somehow Trump's going to make their lives better. What the world would be like if Trump does everything he says he's going to do. That's a scary, scary thought." Well, obviously, Hans isn't listening. He's not paying attention. And did Hans live in some other country when Donald Trump was president the first time around? But then again, when Trump retakes the White House, assuming that's the case, when he retakes the White House, immediately the mainstream media is going to get in gear, full tilt boogie, crucifying Trump, even when he does the right thing and he pulls all the right strings and he gets this country back to work again, back into manufacturing, he brings peace to the world, the freaking mainstream media is going to continue to crucify him. Somehow, we Americans have to find a way to defeat that. Oh, you're going to love this. Don McMillan returns to the Comedy Corner.
Sometimes technology gets into places it really shouldn't be. I noticed it at Walmart. I did. I don't know if you've been to Walmart recently. They have the new self-checkout stands all over the place. I never thought I would yearn for the day of the competent Walmart checkout person until I actually watched a Walmart customer try to check himself out. This guy is like, "Wah." Apparently nobody told him there was a barcode. He's just waving the front. Like there was a guy in that little plate going, "Okay, a hammer, got it." So finally somebody says to him, "You know, there's a barcode. You got to boop, see, boop." And then he gets it. He's like, "Boop, ha, 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 ha." And he's doing pretty good now. He's like, "Boop." And then he gets the rare double boop. He's like, "Boop, boop, boop." And you can see his mind working. And I swear to God, this is what he did. Boop. He tried to unboop it. Like it was going to disappear if you went left to right. And he's like, "Boop, boob." Just wanted to share that. This last part of my act, actually, I think, in many ways, is the most challenging thing I've ever faced in my life as an engineer and as a human. I think it's probably the most undefined, ununderstood. That's good English right there. Problem known to man. And what happened was, as an engineer for years, I was trained. When someone brings you a problem, You break it down, implement a solution, move on. Break it down, implement a solution, move on. Skills that don't work at all in marriage. In fact, they should be forgotten. So when I first got married, I was approaching it like it was an engineering. My wife would bring me a problem. One time she said, I feel fat. I said, reduce your caloric intake, increase your activity. What? What did I say? What? It's a formula. There's no judgment there. Now I've learned. I don't solve anymore. I don't try to solve. Whatever problem she brings me, whatever, she says to me, whatever that is, I just look at her and I go, oh, honey, that's horrible. You must feel terrible. My heart aches for you. Oh, I'm in pain. And I am, because in my head I'm thinking, I could fix this, but I'm not allowed. Ow. I have to willingly do this inefficiently. I'm in pain.
Have a wonderful Wednesday. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on tomorrow's bombastic blogcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And you be sure to take some time today just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
You mean that's it?
Tomorrow, G-Man.